With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to another episode of Wheel of Horror, the podcast where two best friends spin a wheel once a week. It chooses the horror movie, and they discuss it. We're talking about 1991's Cape Fear, which was directed by Martin Scorsese. I'm your co-host, Alec.
I'm Eric, and with us again is, believe it or not, Nick Nolte. Andy Danish. Andy Danish, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I could do a Nick Nolte impression for you, like, hey, what are you guys doing?
It's pretty good off the bat.
Yeah,
that was good.
Well, Andy is an amazing voiceover actor, voiceover extraordinaire. As I introduced you last time, you got shy, but I'll say it again.
Thanks. Well, today we're only here about horror movies, so none of this, you know, ego stroking about my voiceover career. Simply horror movies.
Well, all right, really quick then, and I can cut this out if you really want me to. But really quick. I'm sure you listened to our last episode of Wheel of Horror, so this is old knowledge to you or whatever, but I wanted to play this because Eric was very excited when I told him this. So this is from last week's episode, okay? Let me know if you can hear this.
Hit it.
Oh, cannot wait. He did the voice of Slinky Dog in the Toy Story video game, so you'll have to ask him to do his Jim Barn impression. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know, I forgot.
I'm so excited. You need to play this audio when we record with him. I'm freaking out right now.
Yeah,
play with Slinky Dog. All right.
I'm a huge, the biggest Ernest fan at this age, which is really, yeah.
Well,
I'm proud of it.
It's
sorry to put you on the spot.
No.
Well, yeah, it was like the two actors that originally did him in the movies. It was Jim Varney at first, and then Blake Clark after Jim Varney passed away.
Yep, I know that. Yeah, and he was he played Sean Hunter's dad in Boy Meets World. He was Waterboy, a bunch of Adam Sandler movies. Good actor as well.
Yeah. So
he kind of talks like this, and he has like a very raspy thing where he's very like folksy, and he's like your dad, but he's like, you know, down south Alabama kind of thing.
God damn. I love it. I love it.
Hey, Woody, get over here.
So he has like that folksy-ish like, you know, been around the block, like old and grizzled, but still has like a little friendly spark in him at the same time.
You smoke a pack a day?
I don't need to, although I'm going to sound like it if I keep doing this voice long enough.
Dude.
Oh, wow.
Sorry to put you on the spot, but Eric is such a big Jim Varney fan. I'm just like, oh, dude, like.
That made me so happy. That was so cool. So you're so you did Slinky Dog in the video game.
It was a PlayStation game. It was for, at the time, it was PS3 and PS4 when it came out.
Damn.
And they had, like, all these DLCs from, like, different franchises. So they had a Muppet involved. They had DC Heroes. They had Marvel Heroes. They had a bunch of other Disney movies. They had The Incredibles. So, yeah, I got to work on this one, and I also got to work on the Muppet one.
Love it.
Really
cool. And for those of you listening, we're, like, 3-4 minutes in.
Yeah,
we have not even mentioned Cape Fear.
We'll jump into it. Yeah. But anyways, Andy, sorry to put you on the spot there. We just wanted to,
awesome.
Yeah, Eric was very excited to meet you, and
I'm giddy. I'm giddy right now. That made me smile. Thank you.
Always nice to meet a fan. Yeah. Anyway, back to the movies.
But we're back with Andy from the last time we did Friday the 13th Part 2 with you, Joe, and I, and that was a lot of fun. So now you're back with Eric. We're talking Cape Fear. You texted me specifically for this movie, so why did you want to jump on for this one?
I think just because Hitchcock, you know, the ties to Hitchcock. I loved Hitchcock's movies, And this movie I've seen a lot, and I always remember feeling really impressed about how well it was made, being that it was a remake, but how it kind of did its own thing with having very interesting ties to the original one with Gregory Peck and Robert Mitchum. Mm-hmm.
So you've seen the original one then?
I have. It's really good. It's a very, it's a different movie. It's like, you know, it's not as bonkers and crazy as this one is, because you don't have De Niro being all crazy pants in it.
It's not as stylized, I'd assume.
Everyone's like well-dressed in it more and stuff, right? I'm guessing.
Everyone's more subdued. Like Mitchum as Katie is very crazy. Don't get me wrong. But he's cooler and calmer. Like he's intelligent, but he doesn't also like go like full Jehovah's Witness on everybody.
Yeah. He definitely made some big character choices in this movie. But actually, I want to ask you, Eric, is this your first time ever seeing this, right?
Yes, sir. I mean, yeah, I didn't see the old one, and I never saw this one. And I got to say this, I was so surprised. I knew of this movie. I think the last time I heard of Kate Fear was in a Rick and Morty episode with like the maid hiding under the car in that one episode. I forgot, it was like the Titanic episode or something. She's like, I'm doing Cape Fear. Look at me, Cape Fear. And then she hits a speed bump, which would happen. You hit one thing, a roadkill, you hit one cardboard box in the road, you're done. Going 60.
Right.
Yeah, yep. Like that's rough. But we'll talk about that later. But yeah, it's my first time. And I got to say, I was like, how have I never watched this movie?
Dude, right?
It's like great acting, great actors. Martin Scorsese, like, it's not a masterpiece, but for the time, it's like, you have to see this movie.
Yeah. Dude, I saw this when I was probably like 12. Like, I don't know how or why, but because my mom loved Robert De Niro so much, and like, for some reason, Goodfellas I saw when I was probably like 9 or 10. Like, that was for some reason okay. Casino I wasn't allowed to see. For some reason, but Goodfellas I was.
Makes sense. That makes sense. All sense.
I mean, well, there is one part in Casino that I'm like, it was too much. Even now.
I understand. Like, I do understand. I'm joking.
But yeah, that, you know, Martin Scorsese hot off of Goodfellas making this movie, bringing Robert De Niro back. Like, dude, I love this movie. I've always loved this movie. What was the first time you saw it, Andy?
First time I saw it was, I think, right around the same age you were, where I remember having memories of watching it the first time because my dad introduced me to Hitchcock movies. And then being that I was a fan of Hitchcock movies, but also of De Niro's earlier movies like Raging Bull and Taxi Driver, and the fact that him and Scorsese collaborated so much, and the fact that Scorsese wanted to dive into this, being that the time period that it was, he had just done the like Raging Bull not too long before that. It made sense that he would have De Niro be part of this just because he's a frequent collaborator. But for me, the initial times I remember watching it was just the memories I had was all the boat scenes.
Shit was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. That whole scene was insane. I'm like, rich people problems right here. Like, I don't have a boat to go run away on. And, you know, this is insane.
What did you remember about it, though, Andy? Like, what specifically? Just how crazy it was? Or
yeah, just how crazy it was, how crazy De Niro is in it. Because he does, you know, chew the scenery in it. Let's not be mistaken about that.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he's from New York, who's trying to affect this, like, crazy Southern Baptist affectation and, like, really go over the top being sort of like, you know, foghorn leghorn on everybody. But with like a murderous bent.
I heard that he went down to rural parts of the South with a tape recorder and the script, and he asked people to read the script, and he would listen back to his lines in their drawl or whatever. And that's kind of like how he, that's what I heard.
Oh, you got to see him pulling in improv into this. Like he has like, oh, she's like a frat fox in a forest fire, like stuff like that. You hear like these lines that are like, he doesn't say that specifically, but like, you know, the lines that like you would only get if you went to the South with a tape recorder, and he brought that into the film and he killed it. I want to say one quick thing, because this movie reminded me so much of a movie that came out like 3 or 4 years before this movie, even though this is a remake. I couldn't stop thinking about Fatal Attraction watching this movie. And I don't know if you've watched Fatal Attraction, Glenn Close, Michael Douglas. Michael Douglas cheats on his wife, same way Nick Nolte does. However, instead of like a guy he put in jail, Glenn Close is the crazy one, the girl he cheats on, and like ruins his family, kills the bunny, And the movie's insane. It's a great movie. You should watch it. But like, I was like, this is the same movie, pretty much, minus the boat and like the genius lawyer thing that Robert De Niro brings into it. Like he's like, oh, me and you are lawyers. Like we're just two partners working here. Now it's like, no, you're not a lawyer, dude. You just 14 years you put into studying, pretty much, which is such a cool idea.
Just revenge. I mean, like unbelievable revenge, but like also no reflection. Like Max Cady, like regardless, you know, like here's the thing in the law, what Nick Nolte's character did was wrong. Like what he did was wrong. But like, you got to look at yourself, Max, and be like, maybe I did this to myself a little bit because I was a rapist and a piece of shit. Like maybe I'm getting what I deserve a little bit, you know, because he wouldn't have learned if Nick Nolte stood up for him and he was like, oh, like, you know, first of all, the reason that this girl was being promiscuous, exactly what Nick Nolte said. He's like, this doesn't give you the right to rape her. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, I'll say this. And obviously, Nick Nolte hid the report that this girl, who was, I think, 14, was promiscuous. He completely kept that away from the court, even though he had the document. They never do a flashback scene. We never see what really truly happens, which adds like this, I don't know, ambiguity to Rob De Niro's character. But like, it makes you think, like, if he didn't do it, I mean, like, why is he going through all this trouble? Like, imagine he did it. Yeah, I'm serving my time. I think he didn't really do. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking this, but like, he's so mad that he got put away. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Because he spent 14 years trying to get revenge. Or maybe he's just like, he kept us out of the court. This would have, I did it, but it, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Or it was a 16-year-old girl, I guess. And battery too.
I hear you. I definitely feel like there's definitely solid, that's definitely a solid line of thinking. I think the other thought, which could be, is that Robert De Niro is a psychopath, basically. And
yeah,
he does have no empathy. So he basically is only trying to justify it in his own mind.
He's traumatized too. He was raped in prison. He says he was like gangbanged in prison by white guys, black guys. Sounds like multiple times. He's completely messed up. There's no doubt that he's not a functioning person out in society at this point.
Yeah. And he blames his lawyer for that. Cause he's like, if my lawyer didn't do this, then I wouldn't be in this scenario. And I think obviously being in prison, being alone with his thoughts that whole time and not really having a way to counterbalance it or not talk, being able to talk about it, perhaps maybe he's just talking to himself in prison the whole time, you know, so he doesn't have somebody who's actually saying, wait a minute, you know, are you sure about this? If anything, he's just talking to himself and he's getting validation from like talking to himself the whole time. And I think there's little moments in the movie where he's kind of like talking to himself a little bit, like when he's on the boat and he is, you know, has the gun over Samuel Bowden. And, you know, he's starting to get all be like, and Lord, the God decree justice. But he goes back and forth, you know, in his head, trying to mimic a courtroom in his head.
Yeah.
So there's lots of him looking up and then, you know, treating God as the judge and then looking back down at Bowden. And he's kind of like, you know, talking to himself during that whole moment because he, you know, he goes nuts in that moment. So I have a feeling like he was having that similar discussion in his head while he was in prison. and I think that probably lent itself to obviously the amount of heightened crazy that he got to just because he kept talking to himself so much in prison. So that was my takeaway.
I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, he does at the end explain like why he's like physically like superior, at least what he thinks about, like, you know, the way his grandfather and grandmother and what they did to themselves. So, oh, he's like, my granddaddy played with snakes. My grandma drank like some poison or whatever. And like, so I've always been superior. Then he teaches himself how to read. So he's like, I think he's got this complex where it's like, you think you're better than me? Like, you think I'm some white trash, like hillbilly? So he's like trying to prove he's better because he thinks he's better. And now he's like, I'm going to get what you have because you took, because he has a daughter too. He's a daughter that he's like, now I never get to meet my daughter. So he's like got all this revenge. It's a lot.
Yeah. He's also superhuman at this point. I mean, obviously, he was very productive in prison. The guy's doing push-ups the second they close the door. Talks about that. Obviously, Robert De Niro, like, looked fantastic in this movie. Holy shit. I was like, goddamn. Like,
3% body fat.
He was 3%?
Yeah.
That's insane. That's not healthy either. But, I mean, he must have immediately done push-ups, and then when he goes to bed, read a whole lawyer book. He sounds like he read tons of books and, like, probably the most productive prison inmate of all time, in my mind. But, was I going to say? But it's supernatural because, like, you get hit with a metal pipe in the head. He's not like Vin Diesel in Fast and the Furious. Like, you can't just survive that. Like, you get hit with a metal pipe in the head, you're dead. He's superhuman at this point. Which
his granddaddy got played with snakes, though, Eric.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you get hit with a metal pipe in the head, you're done. You're done. You're out. You're not showing up to showing up to court the next day. You're not thinking. You're dead. And then, I mean, that was a little, okay, this is very 90s. Like, this is still unrealistic, but he gets hit with boiling water, too. And they show him getting hurt with that. They also show him in the court with Gregory Peck, like, and all that stuff. But it's just a little unbelievable, that's all.
Okay, I'll give you that. I don't know, though. I think the performance of the other people we're not talking about, like, obviously Robert De Niro, the character and stuff like that. But, like, I love the relationship between Nick Nolte and Jessica Lange. And apparently it was a lot improvised. Like, they just kind of came up with just, like, a backstory and just, like about her sleeping all day and stuff like that. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it. The freedom they had. They're two very great actors. But I fell in love with Jessica Lange watching this movie. I loved her. Loved her.
She was good. Nick Nolte was really good. Yeah, my favorite scene, I just picture Chris Farley, like, when he gets put on the couch after, like, his wife, like, cheats on him, and he's just, like, on the couch, like, oh, great, this is just great, grand, wonderful. Like, he kind of does that exact thing when he's, like, on the couch on, like, a shitty pillow and, like, a thin blanket. I was dying laughing.
I love that. Yeah, and then Juliet Lewis, too, the daughter. This is, like, right before her career explodes, but, dude, she's 18 in this movie. And that scene with her and Robert De Niro in the theater, also not improvised. Not good. Yes.
Oof. Oof. Dirty.
Apparently, Martin Scorsese talked to Juliette Lewis and was like, something's going to happen. It's, you know, we're going to improvise, but he's going to get a little bit aggressive with you. And yeah, so she wasn't expecting that. That was the first take, was it the thumb in her mouth? She was not expecting that.
I kind of felt that. It felt uncomfortable, that scene in general. Just uncomfortable. Yeah.
Or characters, she's supposed to be 15 at summer school, and then I'll say, how the fuck did this guy get in there? There was, like, no security in 1991. You let this guy in there? Look at this fucking guy.
It's crazy. You think, like, a dad. I mean, this guy, Nick Nolte, is obviously too busy chasing other girls and playing racquetball or whatever and squash instead of spending time with his daughter, Juliette Lewis, and telling her, like, hey, when a guy approaches you who's this age, stay away from him. Like, she's, like, so naive. It's like, you think somebody who works in law would be, like, teaching his daughter, like, about the birds and the bees, at least, and, like, what to avoid. He's a freaking absentee father, it feels like.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, because she's, like, you know, immediately enamored by Katie, and he's, like, a piece of shit. And she's just like, I was reading your poems, and, like, yeah, I memorized this. Like, it's like, why are you interested in this guy? He killed your fucking dog. He's trying to kill you. What are we doing here? It was weird. It was a weird relationship. But, dude, that one scene where Nick Nolte, like, grabs her neck, he's like, did he touch you? And he's, like, choking her and stuff. She's like, oh, my God, get out of here! Like, that.
That's what Matt Katie was doing. He was hoping that would tear the family apart completely. That was the whole point. Yeah, and it worked.
Yeah. Dude, it's brutal. It's brutal.
I started thinking about what you were saying about Jessica Lange when she was scenes with her and Nick Nolte when they're in their house. And they're still working in the Bernard Herrmann score that was, you know, recomposed, or not recomposed, mm-hmm. but re-orchestrated by Elmer Bernstein. There are those little moments where the filming, the cinematography, Jessica Lange's acting does kind of remind, it does affect other Hitchcock movies, I think, almost like Psycho, because Jessica Lange reminds me of Janet Leigh so much.
Yeah, mm. I get that.
Sort of like those little quiet moments, and the little bit of just those little quaint moments where she's in her studio and she's drawing, or where she's having her disagreements with Nick Nolte and she's kind of just smoking, and the way she's carrying herself in it. I almost felt like I was watching a scene between her and, like, Tony Curtis, almost, just because of the way it was filmed, her acting, and the music. And obviously, I think all of that was intentional, is that Scorsese wanted to pay homage to Hitchcock to a certain extent.
Love that take. Yeah, agree.
And I couldn't tell. I almost, like, the camera, I almost thought, because of this cinematography and the quality of the film, I almost thought, like, did they switch it up to celluloid? Like, did they switch it up to make it feel like it was filmed back in the 60s or something. Because I was trying to think of that. I'm watching it. And I'm like, the way this is staged, I could almost swear that they downgraded the camera lens just to give you a similar feel. But I'm probably wrong about that.
It's possible.
I noticed, like, there's a lot of, you know, the quick shots, like the quick cuts of like them playing squash. It's like always when stuff he's doing wrong, like there's the shots of him locking the door, closing the blinds, and like after like pretty much choking his daughter out. It's like when you feel these quick shots, like I thought the cinematography was great. Like I loved, yeah. I was really looking in. It's not a lot of like zoom ins too much. There's not like any like huge claustrophobic feeling things, but there's a lot of jump cuts, which is Scorsese's thing, like a kind of like a Guy Ritchie thing too, almost, but liked it.
Yeah, this is like a little bit of like a surprise Martin Scorsese movie. You're like, it's just like, I don't know, it sneaks up on you, and it's really good. I really appreciate it. I mean, I think Goodfellas is probably my favorite of all time of his, but yeah, I love this, how this is like the next thing that he does. I really enjoy
that. I read something, I didn't read into it, like I heard Scorsese had to be convinced into doing this film. I heard that somewhere. I read that somewhere. I don't know if that's true. I don't know from what convincing, but I saw.
Oh, you're right, Eric. Yes, I know the story. Actually, this is cool. I'm sorry. Do you know the story or?
No. I saw like a brief trivia. Like Scorsese had to be convinced to do this. Like he didn't want to do it.
So apparently, this is the original is a favorite of Steven Spielberg, and he was like, I absolutely want to remake this so bad. And he was like trying to, he got a writer and he was trying to convince, and the writer didn't want to do it. And like, it was a big meeting and like, whatever. So Steven Spielberg wanted to do this, and Martin Scorsese wanted to direct a different movie. But Steven Spielberg basically was like, all right, I'm going to direct Schindler's List, but I kind of have the rights or whatever to this movie. Would you direct Cape Fear instead? So he was like a silent producer on the side, but he was the original one that was tied to be the director, and he convinced him to do it so he could do Schindler's List instead. But it came out 2 years later, so I always thought that was kind of weird.
That's kind of cool. I bet Scorsese was like, I'll do this only if we get Gregory Peck to make an appearance, probably.
And Robert Mitchum, yeah. And Martin Balsam.
And if we can get the music again, but like orchestrated, like he probably had like, I need this if I'm gonna do it, like I can't do it without.
Yeah, there's one character, my favorite is Kursik. I think he's the man. I love him.
What else is he in? What, it drove me crazy. I've seen Kursik? That actor, yeah. Is that who I'm thinking of, the guy he like hires to like hire Hitman? Dude,
Goldeneye, he's in Goldeneye.
Yeah,
yes he is, that's right.
There's something he's in.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Goldeneye.
Probably an Ernest movie that's like in my brain that I just can't. I mean, that's one of the movies, but there's something else that he's in that I'm like, it's driving me crazy. Like Wayne's World or something. He's in something and it's driving me crazy.
Mars Attacks. Joe Dirt.
Oh, that might be it.
That's right. He's his dad in Mars Attacks. He's Jack Black's dad in Mars Attacks.
Yeah. All right. I think I'm like. All right, I got to look him up later.
He's in Joe Dirt. He's Brandy's dad, Eric, and Joe Dirt. So that might be it, too. But he's still alive.
That might secretly be it. I heard he was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I saw that the other day. But no. I gotta look up more stuff he's done. Yeah, he's like in that, right? Or
he retired in 2012.
Huh.
Dude, he's 86. He's up there. But anyway, so he's my favorite. And Eric, the one thing that I remember is, and I remember this guy I used to work with did this, and I was like, I can't remember why I remember this. But the Pepto-Bismol with the whiskey, I was like,
holy fuck.
I'm like, get out of here with that. You are an
absolute degenerate. Degenerate. Oh my God. I can't even fathom doing that. Like whiskey and Pepto. Your esophagus must be depleting out of your body if you're doing that. That's insane.
That's what he's doing so he can continue to drink. Because that guy looks like he smokes a lot of cigarettes, drinks a lot of whiskey, drinks a lot of black coffee. He's
raw
a lot
meat,
of hot sauce.
Raw red meat. Like, oh, God, this guy's got 4 good years in him.
He's
four
still alive. He's still alive.
Well, the character, though. Like, if the actor's doing that, he wouldn't be alive right now.
Like, yeah.
Pepto.
Well, you know, he does a lot of stakeouts, obviously. He does a lot of overnight stakeouts, and he needs something to get him through the night, of course. So you need to have your balance of your tequila as well as your Pepto-Bismol because his stomach might be rumbling in the middle of the night. But he's also got to stay drunk and alert, so he's a functioning alcoholic.
High function. If you're mixing Pepto and whiskey,
and he doesn't have a lot of time, you know, he doesn't have, he's managing his time at the same time. He's like, all right, I don't have time to drink both of these things differently, so I got to do it all together.
He doesn't even put that shit. He doesn't even put that shit on the rocks. He just straight up pours it in a glass and is like, let's go.
No, he pours it in a coffee mug.
I know, it's even worse.
And then he says, he's like, this is my daddy's favorite drink when he was on strike. And then he immediately gets killed. And I gotta say, when Robert De Niro is like, and he like turns and he's dressed up as Glendia or the maid or whatever.
Gracilia?
Gracilia, yes. When he's dressed up as Gracilia, I was like, I completely forgot about that. But he goes like, he's hot. And I was like, this is
so
crazy.
Good.
Yeah, my daddy used to drink this. Dude, that movie, I'm sorry, I love this movie. The entire time I was completely enamored. I don't know. Oh, sorry, really quick, also want to say this. Apparently, Bill Murray was going to be Caddy, if Spielberg was the director. That was another thing they said. That was another like big trivia, which would have been not good, I don't think.
I don't see that being as good. I mean, I like Bill Murray, but I don't know if he can
I love
swing this role. But I also read that, like, I think Reese Witherspoon and Drew Barrymore were up for the daughter role, Nick Nolte's daughter that Julia Lewis got. So, like, Reese Witherspoon probably would have been good. I don't know. Drew Barrymore might have been a little too silly. I don't know. Maybe.
I also read that.
Either one could have worked, but yeah.
I think Bill Murray would have been a very different direction, obviously. I think it would have been a very different direction, of course. I think, obviously, it would have steered the course of the story or steered the scenes differently because I think he would have been much more subtle and low-key and probably similar to what Robert Mitchum's performance would have been in the original one. So he probably would have tried to be a little bit more slyer in a more subdued way.
Andy, Alec, picture this. Close your eyes. Imagine Robert De Niro just got hit with a boiling pot of water. He's handcuffed to something that's sinking, and he's going, Ezekiel 25, 30. Like, he must have looked like a fucking lunatic if he had that role. Robert De Niro is a way better casting for this.
I mean, remember John Voight in Anaconda?
Midnight Cowboy?
No, Anaconda. Like, that was kind of like a weird similar character, and that did not work at all. So it's a very thin line of who can play these kind of characters. So I don't think Bill Murray would have been able to pull it off either.
I like John Voight in Anaconda. You watch your tongue. You watch your tongue, Alec. I like John Voight in Anaconda.
I know. You're right. He's
coming off of Deliverance, doing that's pretty sick. That was my take. Sorry.
My bad. But yeah, Andy, you got a favorite character from Cape Fear?
I think just any of the three originals who kind of are guests. You know, Gregory Peck also tries to lean into the Southern thing a lot, too. The KFC, almost on Colonel Sanders, because he's got, like, the jacket, and he's holding his pocket watch. And, you know, he's also kind of being all old and folksy. What's the saint's name that he calls upon? He's like, St. Andrews couldn't have decreed a better judgment.
Yeah, it says King Solomon. He's like, King Solomon couldn't.
King Solomon couldn't have decreed a better judgment.
Yeah, I'm like, geez, church and state is really not too intertwined here, huh? Like, geez. Yeah, that was great, though. That was Gregory Peck's, I think, last performance, I think they said,
No. He was in a Moby Dick film. I saw he did a made-for-TV Moby Dick film. I remember him. He played Captain Ahab, too. He's very known for that. But he's been in a few other films since this. And then, yeah, I think he died in, like, 2000, I assume. Something like that. Mm.
Okay, actually, Eric, really quick, I wanted to ask you, too, while I'm thinking about this. You remember, obviously, Andy, are you a South Park fan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you remember the scene, the Trent Boyant episode where at the preschool and they like send that kid to like juvie or whatever and he gets out and he's got like, do you think that was a spoof of this? I was always wondered.
Oh, there are so many nods to Cape Fear in so many shows. Like in The Simpsons, there's a famous one where like they do a whole spoof of the movie when Homer and his family have to relocate to the boat after.
Yeah.
Sideshow Mel escapes from prison and, you know, Sideshow Bob, he has like the tattoos on his body in prison and he hides under the car and straps himself with a belt and, you know, the fact that they run away to a houseboat. But there's so many nods, even with like the score, like, you know, the whole da, 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 da.
Yeah.
there's a lot of different shows that I think have done parodies. But yeah, I'm willing to bet that that was probably a parody of it, too.
What do you think, Eric? I mean, because you've seen South Park so many times. Did you get that feeling at all?
No, because I don't think Nick Nolte was scared of him getting out. But like, yeah, once he got out, they're like, oh, shit.
No, like the character, like the way he, because he has all the tattoos and it's just like, Trent, what are you going to do? And he's like, retribution.
Oh, right. And he's speaking all religious. Yeah, religious. Yeah, I guess the character.
Like, yeah, and he's got a pretty Southern accent, you know?
No, you're right on that point. But like, yeah, well, the boys, like Cartman and them were scared that he was getting out. And then Nick Nolte had no idea he was getting out. He didn't even remember him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just the character more. But yeah, because he even says the things like, can you give me back my time? And that's kind of basically like Robert De Niro when he's in the car.
Yeah.
You know what? Also, you know, Robert De Niro getting fucked over. At least he got all that money when he got out, you know?
Yeah, what is it? He said it's like, oh, like how much you want? $50,000? Like 100? Be like, no. And he gets all Bobby Boucher on that moment. And he's like tripping over his words. Like, no. Oh, hold on. Let's break that down. And be like,
right.
$50,000 over 14 years. And he's like,
$10
a day. To that's $10 a day. Like, is that worth my time, counselor? $10 a day?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he makes a good point. I mean, it's just, I mean, yeah. Not that I'm rooting for a rape and battery guy, but like, we still truly don't know the story. I don't know. They never show a flashback.
Well, you know what I like, though, is Nick Nolte's his character breaks down throughout the whole thing, obviously. But like, right from the start, his partner is pissed off at him. He's just like,
he's cheating on her. Constantly.
No, not that. No. His what? Business part, his lawyer partner at the firm. He's like,
you buried it. Yep.
He's like, it was 77. I was fucking, Star Wars came out. I was busy. I don't know. And it was just like, you buried it. And he was just like, I don't know. I'm sorry. But I like how that guy was mad. And then, you know, obviously by the end, it's like his marriage is falling apart. His mistress is like, you know, just fucking destroyed. His relationship with his daughter strained. He's like smoking again. It's just like, yeah, it's sad, man. They never talked about it, too. That's the way it ends. It's like,
he's on the border of being disbarred, too. He's like almost about to lose.
Yeah, he's going
to
lose everything.
Not be able to be a lawyer anymore.
Right. He didn't go to the thing either. It's like, I got to go to the thing in Raleigh. It's like, and he pretends to go, but he doesn't go. So does he lose his bar? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, but he has his family back. That's the point of the movie at the end. Like, he lost his money, everything, but he has his family because his family knows, like, he sacrificed as much as he could.
And then it ends with, it's like, we never talked about it again. Dun, dun, dun. Just like, oh my God, what? What?
And Jessica Lange just shows up with a cigarette, like, I tried so hard to understand what we were going through.
It's just her in American Horror Story.
Pretty much. I mean, that's a great take, Andy, about like Janet Leigh. And yeah, that's probably why American Horror Story picked her up, because she's good at that kind of role for sure.
Yeah, and American Horror Story also kind of has nods to Hitchcock movies as well. Even like the way it's filmed, the dialogue, the score, there is like light affectations, and the way she talks very delicately, and you know, she's kind of just like afraid to really say what she's really trying to say, but just kind of like keeps herself back and speaks delicately with her words. Yeah, Jessica Lange is really good in that type of role or in that type of casting. Yeah. And I think also as far as like the end goes, obviously there's symbolism in some of the shots, like, you know, cause it's Scorsese. And there's the scene where it's like, as soon as De Niro gets dragged under the water because he's handcuffed to the boat, you know, Nolte is like looking down at his hands in the water and it's like all bloody and cut. But then he like washes his hand and all of a sudden everything's gone. You know, his hands are completely clean. So he's kind of like washed his sins in the river. And so I don't know if that's supposed to symbolize basically that.
That's Jesus. That's Jesus when, what's his name, washed his hands. Like, he's like, I forgot, not Caesar. It's going to drive me crazy. The washing the hands. You know that story, right? Like, he gives, I'm going to say Caesar because I don't know the freaking name right now. He gives Jesus the opportunity to go free. And he has this other rapist guy.
Oh, Pontius Pilate?
Pontius Pilate gives the people the decision to either let Jesus free or Barabbas, who's like a rapist. And the people choose Barabbas. And this guy just goes free and probably is going to rape and kill a bunch of people. And Pontius Pilate washes his hands. And I think that was the symbolism of that. It's not my fault, is what he is saying, pretty much.
Yeah.
It was not my decision.
I mean, he's like, I'm going to kill you.
There's that shot beforehand also where he's lifting the rock and he's about to put it over in the, you know, hit De Niro's head with it. And of course he doesn't get the opportunity because he gets pulled away. But the way like his face is covering mud and his teeth look all yellow and he kind of looks all feral in that shot where he's kind of looking at his most animalistic and his most fierce looking he is because of what he's about to do that is so outside of what he would normally do or how he would normally act. But he's kind of just like been pushed to his limit because Katie pushed him to that point. I thought that was a really great shot to kind of encapsulate what was happening emotionally in that moment.
Dude, it's great. So much intensity. It really is awesome. Like, yeah, just see this movie. Like, just watch it. It's amazing. It's intense. There are some really intense moments. Like, when his mistress, who I love that actress, by the way. I can't remember her name, but...
Ileana Douglas?
Oh, I love her. I love her. When her face gets bit, dude, like...
Freaked me out, yeah.
Dude, I was, like, way too young to be seeing that. And but anyways, that was intense.
That's why we're here right now. We're all traumatized and doing wheel horror. I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. Well, anyways, why don't we wrap up here? Do you guys you have any last-minute thoughts on Cape Fear?
I'll go first, and this is a humble brag. Alec, you know this. I was on I bought a treadmill recently, and I was on the treadmill the entire time watching this movie. So when Robert De Niro was, like, dying, I was too. I walked the entire time. I didn't run. I mean, I did like light jogs, but yeah, I was ready to collapse. It was like one of the first times I ran. But
2 hours. I mean, that's a pretty long time. Yeah.
It was a long walk, dude. It was uphill, most of the incline style. Like, yeah, I'm still hurt. And then I watched this like 4 days ago. Anyway, right. Andy, your takeaway.
I just appreciate it for all the little subtle things about it. Just like I said, the little subtle choices they make with the actors, how they tie it into the original movie and pays homage, and just how well it's directed and acted, and how they made it their own at the same time without trying to be like a carbon copy of like Hitchcock's movie, but still tying in that legacy into it. And even in little things like the shot, some of the shots he does where he's making love to his wife and then all of a sudden it goes to like black and white inverted colors, but then, you know, while they're both like in it and like feeling passionate and like aroused, but then once Jessica Lange kind of comes back out of it, the colors come back to normal. And they kind of did a similar thing with like Juliette Lewis's shot where the colors kind of invert and, you know, the lens takes on a completely different palette, and then it goes back to normal when they're kind of like in a more normal headspace. That was kind of a tactic that older movies would do where they would kind of like change up the tint of the lens, you know, to allude to something, to symbolize something that was happening on camera. So I figured that was a pretty cool tip of the cap from Scorsese's part. And yeah, that's my thought. It's just, I appreciate it for all those subtle things that it does.
No, I agree with everything both of you guys said.
I picked up too that black and white stuff was like the law. Like, the law is not black and white. That's what the only thing I thought of. Nothing is clear. I don't know. That's what I got from that for a minute. But yeah, anyway, Alec, wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I very much enjoyed it. Obviously, I've seen it a bunch throughout my life, but I'm glad we finally got to it on the podcast. Yeah, love Jessica Lange in this movie. I think she's fantastic. I know Juliette Lewis, I think she won an Academy Award for this, or at least got nominated. But yeah, that's really cool. Scorsese, honestly, just at his best. I mean, I've loved him since the 70s. I think he's had such an amazing run. I got to work on one of his movie sets. That was really cool. There's my little humble brag, Eric.
I like it. It wasn't a humble brag. I was dying on that treadmill, by the way. There was nothing bragging about that. But yeah, you're right. Academy Awards, Best Actor, Robert De Niro, Best Supporting Actress, Juliette Lewis. Nominated, didn't win, but yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing, dude. It's so good. But anyways, Eric, why don't you spin the old wheel there?
I'll spin the wheel. All right, ready?
Yeah.
Spinning. All right, we got Nope.
Nope. Nope. Oh, my God.
Nope, nope.
Have you seen Nope, Andy?
I have. I enjoyed it.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to watching it and recording it with you, Eric. That's going to be fun.
Hell yeah. I might sit on my couch for that one and not be on a treadmill. But we'll see. Yeah.
But Andy, just wanted to say thanks again, dude. You're an amazing guest. It's so good to have you back. And I'm glad that you and Eric finally got to meet. That was cool. You're welcome back anytime.
Ah, shucks. You say such nice things. And I'll say they're true. I'll go along with it. But yeah, nice to meet you. Also, East Coaster, fellow East Coaster, always make sure we stick together. I'm trying to make sure I maintain an East Coast state of mind while I'm out here in LA.
Network with me, man. Network with me. Hit me up on anything. Yeah. Dude, great meeting you. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for listening in. And we will see you all next week with Nope.